Translation, I'll read it and then repeat after me. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. Purport given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The Bhagavad Dharma, or the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, is perfectly distinct from the way of fruitive activities, which are considered by the devotees to be merely a waste of time. The whole universe, or for that matter all material existence, is moving on as Jagat, simply for planning business to make one's position very comfortable or secure. Although everyone sees that this existence is neither comfortable nor secure, and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. Those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of material civilization, following the way of phantasmagoria, are certainly madmen. The whole material creation is a juggler of names only. In fact, it is nothing but a bewildering creation of matter, like earth, water, and fire. The buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, or even the highest perfection material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are all simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reactions of the three modes. Since the devotee of the Lord knows them perfectly well, he is not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all reality, but simply names of no more significance than the babble of sea waves. The great kings, leaders, and soldiers fight with one another in order to perpetuate their names in history. They are forgotten in due course of time, and they make a place for another era in history. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. The fruitive worker aspires after a big fortune in the matter of wealth, women, and worldly adoration. But those who are fixed in perfect reality are not at all interested in such false things. For them, it is all a waste of time. Since every second of human life is important, an enlightened man should be very careful to utilize time very cautiously. 1 second of human life wasted in the vain research of planning for happiness in the material world can never be replaced, even if one spends millions of coins of gold. Therefore, the transcendentalist desiring freedom from the clutches of Maya or the illusory activities of life is warned herewith not to be captivated by the external features of fruitive actors. Human life is never meant for sense gratification, but for self-realization. Srimad Bhagavatam instructs us solely on this subject from the very beginning to the end. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. The civilization which aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. And such a perfect civilization prepares men only to accept the bare necessities of life, or to follow the principle of the best use of a bad bargain. Our material bodies and our lives in that connection are bad bargains, because the living entity is actually spirit, and spiritual advancement of the living entity is absolutely necessary. Human life is intended for the realization of this important factor, and one should act accordingly, accepting only the bare necessities of life, and depending more on God's gift without diversion of human energy for any other purpose, such as being mad for material enjoyment. The materialistic advancement of civilization is called the civilization of the demons, which ultimately ends in wars and scarcity. The transcendentalist is specifically warned herewith to be fixed in mind, so that even if there is difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge even an inch from his stark determination. For a transcendentalist, it is a suicidal policy to be intimately in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world, because such a policy will frustrate the ultimate gain of life. Sukadev Goswami met Maharaj Parikshit when the latter felt a necessity for such a meeting. It is the duty of a transcendentalist to help persons who desire real salvation and to support the cause of salvation. One might note that Sukadev Goswami never met Maharaj Parikshit while he was ruling as a great king. For a transcendentalist, the mode of activities is explained in the next sloka. अता कवि नामसु यावदर्थः स्याद् अप्रमत्तो व्यवसाय बुद्धिः सिद्धे न्यतर्थे नयते ततत्र परिश्रमां तत्र समीक्षमानः. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life. While in the world of names, he should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakalam Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kantha Radha Kantha Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaye Bacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna, everyone. Obviously, please ask for the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled and the senior Vaishnavas, and of course, everyone who's watching online. It's been a while since I gave a Bhagavatam class. It's been over a year, so, a little rusty. But I'll try to do my best to convey certain understandings on this verse. So, it's obviously at the moment we can see that Sukadev Goswami, he's explaining, really essentially he's explaining what Maharaj Pariksit should be doing and what he should be focusing on. He starts up with the Virat Rupa. He looks at different features of the material creation and what specifically Maharaj Pariksit should be focusing on in these last few days of his life. And he's really hitting home the essence of actually now's the time to not actually look at any peripheral factors. Now's the time to focus on the essence. I mean, this is essentially the message of Bhagavatam throughout. It's all about getting rid of all the frills and just focusing on the essence. We know that the Bhagavatam is actually part of the Vedic scriptures, and the Vedic scriptures is quite vast. About 98% of the Vedas is actually to do with the karmakandic activities. How to make yourself situated in the material world, how to make yourself prosperous. There are books, scriptures on, health, wealth, economics, politics, diplomacy, warfare, even sense gratification, all these kind of things. And it's only when a person, after following the Vedas, or after following a pious life, and many after many, many lives, when the living entity, the Atma, actually realizes that even whether I follow the Vedas, whether I follow things properly to get enjoyment, whether I don't, whatever enjoyment I'm getting in this material world, ultimately, it is just a case of japalasukha. It is simply temporary and limited. The happiness that I'm getting from this material life will never actually give me the true satisfaction. And then the living entity actually realizes that whatever I'm experiencing this life, it's always going in circles of bhoga, tyaga, bhoga, tyaga. Enjoyment, austerity. Enjoyment, austerity. You see that on an individual level, in our own lives, right? Sometimes we have like times when we're enjoying ourselves, and other times we're going through dry patches, times when we're sick of enjoyment and we just want to, as they say, go cold turkey, right? And that also applies to societies. You see history, civilizations, they go through good times, they go through bad times. I was looking at British history, and back in the day, Britain used to rule the world, right? They had the whole British Empire, and things couldn't have been so good for the British country, nation. And then now gradually you see Prabhupada's quotes on Britain and how it'll obviously pan out over the next few centuries. Already we're seeing, you know, little cracks appearing in the British society with the, you know, whatever political stuff going on, the fuel issues, resources, things like that. You know, cracks are starting to appear. So like this, we see that it goes through. But here, Sugadev Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj that now is the time to not waste in all these kind of material activities, trying to improve your material situation. Now's the time to actually focus on what is important in life. In the Nectar of Instruction, in the second verse, it talks about the six things which are not conducive to devotional life. And one of the first things that is mentioned is Atyahar. Atyahar means over-endeavoring unnecessarily for material things. Okay? And we have to be careful, because even as devotees in devotional life, sometimes we can be guilty of that in the name of service, right? Sometimes we can actually end up over-endeavoring and lose the essence of what we're here for. And actually, Prabhupada talks about in this purport that those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of mature civilization are certainly madmen. So in the Ishopanishad and in the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about four types of mad people in material advancement, right? There are four types of people who are just literally slogging themselves away for material, material fruitive activities. Would someone like to guess what these four types of people are? Any ideas? For those maybe Bhakti Shastri students will know from Ishopanishad. So one of them is mudhas, right? So anyone knows what mudhas are? Fools, yes. These are people that are just... mudhas, actually, Prabhupada compares them to ass. And Prabhupada mentions that ass is a symbol of stupidity. So therefore, these mudhas, these foolish people, they're just slogging away for expending so much energy, but actually it's not really coming to much. Does he know what the other ones are? Not quite. Not in the four categories. Yes, Govinda Prabhu. Yes, mayaya pahita jnana. Their intelligence is taken away by maya. Okay, so these people might externally be very intelligent, right? You might, you know, Prabhupada often talks about scientists, the material world. They got lots of intelligence, lots of high-level skill sets. But what are they doing with it? Where is it? Where are they taking their material knowledge? Where is it actually taking us as a society, you know? So these are the kind of like the second type of people. Then Prabhupada also talks about Vedavadarathas. Vedavadarathas are people that actually, they portray themselves as spiritual people. They'll even use the Vedas to actually back up their, you know, statements and their policies. And you see this going on throughout the world right now. You've got a lot of people proclaiming to be spiritual authorities, but they generally have some sort of social political agenda. Back in the day, if you look, this has been going on. In the olden days, you had Ravana. Ravana was a great Vedic scholar. But what was he using it for? Ravana is very learned, actually. He even composed a set of prayers to Lord Shiva called the Tandav Stotra. Right? He could probably defeat a lot of Vedic scholars of the modern age. But what was the point of it? He simply used it for sense gratification. So we have to be careful as well that even when we come into spirituality, that we have to look at even the people who are, you know, using spirituality to spread some message. What exactly is the value of that message? Where is it taking us? Okay? So those are the Vedavadaratha. And then, of course, you got the Naradamas, which are the lowest of mankind. They're the ones that don't follow any kind of principles, just literally just do what they want, just living whimsically as well. So we can see that in Kali Yuga, we have all these kinds of people, actually. And it's a shame, actually, because obviously we know as well that this human form of life is actually a very rare form of life. It's the life we can finally ask the question, Atata Brahma Jigyasa, what is the purpose of this life? What is the supreme reality? What is the meaning of this Brahman? And Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita that only when you ask this question does your human life actually start. And until then, Prabhupada says, right, we're two-legged animals. So, and it's interesting because If you look at, in Yudhishthira Maharaj once actually mentioned that what is the most wonderful thing in the world? He was asked in the Mahabharata, he was asked by a yaksha, what is the most wonderful thing in the world? And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, Ahanyahani bhutani gachanti yamalayam, shesa stavar michanti, kim ascharyam attaparam. Every day, all around us, we see millions and millions of people, entities everywhere, dying away. And yet, we think that it's not going to happen to us. We never think that it's going to come to us. So here again, Sukadeva Goswami is hitting home that don't get caught up in this material advancement. Don't get caught up in this material civilization. Ultimately, you have to just focus on what is the real aspect of life, self-realization. Go back to Krishna. This whole material energy was actually created by him anyway. Ekalishur Krishna Arashava Britto Yareyache Nachaya Shetaiche Korinitto. Lord Krishna alone is a supreme controller. All others are his servants. They make him dance as he wants them to. So, Prabhupada then goes on to mention that this whole material creation, which is like made up of earth, water, fire, producing buildings and mills and factories and all these kind of things, they are simply reactions of the three modes. Sometimes, you know, you see in the world, politicians or leaders, they think that, okay, if I adjust the material situation this way or that way, I'm going to make the solution better. It never ever happens like that. It never does. Sometimes you'll see like, okay, people may say that, okay, right now we're living in this modern age, but we do have it better. Life right now is better than what is in the medieval times. Okay, yes, temporarily, but then whatever you're doing now is going to cause a reaction to it. You're not actually, it's not like, even if you don't receive the reaction from it, they will start bubbling up under the surface and come through, right? Whether it's physical reactions, physical diseases, ailments like they had back in the day, the disease ailments will happen, but in a different way. Like Sachinandan Maharaj once said that in the coming years, we're going to experience a tsunami in mental health problems, well-being issues. You can see that already happening, isn't it? Like, you know, and you can see that even in Krishna consciousness, a lot of people that are coming to Krishna consciousness are coming because they've got mental health issues, right? They're wanting some sort of like relief from it, right? So you can see that whether you have alleviate a problem this way, it's going to manifest this way. You can't actually sort out the material world because it's not meant to be sorted in that way. It is designed to frustrate. Yeah? And these material modes, no matter how much you try and combine them, it's like the material modes, they're like the primary colors. Red, yellow, blue. That's the one. Red, yellow, and blue, right? If you combine them, they'll just come up with other colors. Secondary colors, tertiary colors, and the list will just go on and on. But you're not actually getting out of the modes in any way. You're still within the modes. Even if you're in mode of goodness, you're still not actually on a spiritual level. So therefore, no matter how much we try to manipulate the material modes of nature, they will not actually solve it. The other day, last few weeks, His Holiness Sri Ram Swami Maharaj was doing these talk shows. And one thing Marge was talking about is in this age, the over-reliance on technology. And you know, because, and it's in one sense, it's said actually in that as the years progress, technology will become more dominant. Actually, they say two things actually. Technology will become more dominant, but at the same time, people will also want to look at spirituality more. So both things are going to happen in tandem. I'll be honest with you, I see that in Krishna consciousness as well. Like even when we're doing preaching now, like we're having to use more technology to preach as well. It's a little annoying actually at certain times, but you know, I guess at the same time, you have to do it. But we have to also keep aware of how much technology we're using. Even in the Mahabharata, there was a famous pastime when there was a forest called the Khandav Prastha Forest, which was burning. And then Arjun actually, and then all the, you know, the living entities were coming out the forest. And Arjun then ended up having a fight to save that forest from Indra and Agni, who were burning that forest, right? And he defeated them. And then after he defeated them, a Danav like these celestial beings, they're like kind of lower level celestial beings, like a Rakshasa type, but very intelligent being, came out of that forest and because Arjun saved him. And then Maya Dhanavachi came to Arjun and said, you know, my dear Arjun, thank you so much for saving me. Is there any way in which I can repay you? I can give you anything you want. Right, remember, this is Maya Dhanav. He's like, he can create planets. He can create all sorts of like different sorts of you know, wonderful material things. And then Maya Dhanav started to relay all the different things they can give to Arjun. You know, like gems, weapons, you know, this, you know, like, you know, knowledge about this or that. And then he went to this one thing and he said, I can give you yantra gyan. Now, yantra means machine, right? So like the knowledge of technology. This is back in the day in Mahabharata. And then at that point, Krishna was next to Arjun, and Krishna was listening to Maya Dhanav relay all the gifts he can give. And as soon as he said yantra gyan, Krishna stopped Arjun and says, don't accept that one. Don't accept that one, because that one will create auspiciousness for society. So, inauspiciousness. He said that will create inauspiciousness for society. And so he said that the knowledge of technology, and this is amazing because Krishna himself created everything. So that even the yantra gyan, that's also coming from Krishna. And he himself is saying, don't accept it, because it is not going to be good, actually. And this actually goes in line with this verse as well, because in the verse it's talking about living simply and not getting too much involved in the whole kind of like world of names and things like that. And you see that as well nowadays. In fact, there's a direct correlation between the use of technology and also our, you know, a lot of the kind of like mental health issues that are happening. There's a connection with the doshas. There's a connection with, if you lose too much technology, it increases the vata in your body, which makes you more ethereal, which then makes you less grounded, which makes you more disconnected with the society around you. So we have to be, as devotees as well, because I know devotees use a lot of technology, we have to be careful how much we're in, you just, you know, involving ourselves in technology. I mean, I'm trying to preach to myself here, because my life basically revolves around Zoom calls and, you know, meetings and things like that. So, you know, I actually start to envy those devotees like Srinivas Prabhu, who doesn't even have a mobile phone. It's like, I wish one day I can get to that stage where I don't even have to use a mobile phone, because, you know. And Prabhupada said as well in the Ishapanishad that right now it's a godless civilization directed towards the so-called advancement of education is more dangerous than a civilization in which the masses of people are less educated. So I'll repeat that again. He's saying that a civilization which is disconnected from Krishna, which even though may be very educated, is worse than a civilization where the people are uneducated. Right? In the Ishapanishad, the Prabhupada even says that there's two types. There's vidya and avidya. There's knowledge and ignorance. But he actually says that avidya, which is ignorance, is worse than knowledge, which is misdirected. In other words, better to not have so much knowledge if it's going to be misdirected, if you're going to use it misdirectedly, and better to live in a state of, like, you know, uneducation. So I thought that's a very interesting point there. And anyway, yeah, so then Prabhupada goes on in the purport. He talks about the transcendentalist desires freedom from the clutches of Maya and is warned not to be captivated by the external features of fruitive actors. Okay, so same thing. Prabhupada's talking about this God-centered life and how it's more valuable than this colossal hoax of a civilization which you're living in right now. You can name it under socialism, altruism, whatever it is, but ultimately is becoming useless. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. Yeah. There's a lovely verse actually, where it talks about, I can't remember the full verse. Maybe someone can help me here. It goes, Daktva Sadharman Charanam Bhujam Harer. Yes, that's the one, yeah. So I'll paraphrase it. I know the English paraphrase. In other words, what the verse is saying, this is Bhagavatam, that it's better to lead a spiritual life, dedicating yourself towards self-realization and not fulfilling your duties perfectly, even if you don't perfectly perform it, better to do that than a materialist who performs his duties perfectly. So as devotees, sometimes we get into the mood of like, you know, I'm not doing my sadhana properly. Again, I'm preaching to myself. I'm not saying you guys. I'm sure your sadhana is brilliant. But like, you know, sometimes, you know, you feel that, okay, my sadhana is not brilliant. My chanting is not brilliant. You know, I can't get up every day for Mangalarti. Or I'm not reading as focusedly as I should. And all these kind of things, right? But you know what? That verse gives me a lot of hope, because it means that at least I'm endeavoring on this path. And even though there might be materialists who might be much more expert in what they do than what I'm doing, but at least I know that, well, according to the Bhagavatam, it's still better to do this. So I thought that's quite hope-giving, actually. So anyway, like this, Prabhupada goes on to say that, that, you know, the whole purpose of human life. And one thing as well, Prabhupada actually mentions here, is that even if there is difficulty in living simply, in plain living and high thinking, a transcendentalist does not budge from his stark determination. So I thought that's powerful, because I think even amongst devotees, we sometimes have a tendency to try and make our mature lives as suitable as possible, to make it as comfortable as possible, so that we can actually, do our devotional life. Sometimes we even think about that in terms of our preaching. Let's make our preaching materially as accessible as possible, so that we can then, tap into society. And of course, there is that as well, because we can see there are innovators, the great acharyas, who are great innovators like Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada himself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that did, use the mature energy to kind of make themselves, accessible. But in terms of their own lifestyles, they did not budge. Sometimes we see as well, in a lot of spiritual religious traditions, there's this kind of mood that, okay, wealth is a sign of God's grace, right? Even in the olden days, you had Protestant work ethic, right? That, yes, that, you know, the profit is a sign of God's blessings. But actually, as far as we're concerned, that's not necessarily true at all, actually. You know, for us, our spiritual advancement and prosperity is not based on economics. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, this is interesting, because I was actually thinking about the manna as well, because, you know, we're living in an interesting time, because manna is obviously established, and has the devotees at the manna have worked hard over decades and decades, from humble situations where they were breaking the furniture and putting in the fireplace just to heat up the place because there's no central heating, and taking showers under cold water because there's no central heating or anything, and just going out there with hardly any clothes on to try and sell books to keep the manna going. And from that, over like the last 40, 50 years, we've come to a stage now, we've got all these kinds of like projects going on. You know, we've got the, you know, Haveli, and we've got like all Goshala, and we've got all these things. And yeah, it's interesting. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, in his biography, Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, he actually encouraged his mutts, his temples, to be in debt. He actually promoted, I want my temples to be in debt. I was going to ask you guys, why do you think that is? Why do you think Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj wanted to keep his temples in debt? Yes, Prabhuji? Okay, so one. Okay, so Prabhuji is saying is to keep them going out to bring Lakshmi in. Yeah, okay, and then Mataji?
I guess not to be complacent.
Yes, Mataji is saying not complacency, and then Cyrus Prabhu?
To learn to depend on God.
Yes, to learn to depend on God. To learn to depend. Sometimes, if we're living in too much opulence, what happens is it keeps us a bit, it kind of like makes us a bit complacent, and we lose that fire, we lose that edge. And actually, this is something that you see even in, even in kami activities, sometimes you see like in sports, they keep themselves very strict. I remember years ago, I was watching a documentary on boxing, right? Sorry, I'm bringing a little example here. But I was watching a documentary on boxing, and it was looking at Mexico and how they've actually had the most, like, I think in some weight category, the most world champions, I don't know what it is, middleweight or something. And they and a lot of these proportion of these champions, they came from a specific gym in a specific town in Mexico. It's like that particular town seemed to have bred all these champion boxers generation after generation. And when they went to this gym, they saw that, you know, you think that would be like a very plush gym with like, you know, high tech equipment and, you know, all the like top quality, like, you know, sort of, you know, weight training and all that kind of stuff going on. And it was nothing like that. It was like this ramshackle, you know, with the, like, you know, with the holes and cracks in the walls, like, you know, like a third world Mexican town, you know, it's like, cracks in the walls and there's like, you know, insects and rats going on the floor and everything, even though they're probably raking in millions, right? Because they've got such a rep. They got all the pictures of all the world champions there, but the actual gym itself looks very basic. And the presenter was asking, like, to the main, the gym owner, the, you know, the main coach, world famous coach, that, why do you keep it like this? And goes, this is actually how I keep them on edge. I don't want them to be surrounded by too much kind of like technology and, you know, like too much comfortable equipment, you know, with the conveyor belts and, you know, like you have in modern, like, David Lloyd Center or something. I want them to actually keep it raw. And that's actually how they bring out the fire in them. So I was thinking that as well, that in Brahmacharya ashrams as well, like, you know, like, there's a mood of like just keeping it raw. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj used to say, isn't it, that the mutt is not meant for people who are into sense gratification or decorating their body. It's not meant for wrestlers. It's not meant for aristocrats. Even if we are low on manpower, we'd rather. In fact, there's a quote, isn't it, in the Brahmacharya ashram right now. They keep that they're in our ashram as well. Even if we're low in manpower, we'd rather have a few people living in that kind of like basic raw state than having lots of opulence and then ruin the whole thing. So I thought that was a very powerful, powerful kind of, you know, like, message. And obviously at the same time, you know, at the manor is something for us to think about as well. How do we navigate that with the fact that we also want to run the projects and have opulence and need to obviously keep the opulence going to make sure our preaching endeavours. So that's something for us to think about for the future and not get affected by puja lav pratishtha. Keeping the rawness while at the same time prospering. I think that's the, I'm sure a lot of, hopefully, in one sense it's a good problem to have. If you're a temple or a society, it's a good problem to have, isn't it? To actually, you know, to actually think about and how to deal with that as well. So I like that as well. Actually, there's another story as well, which I thought is nice when it comes to sort of not being affected by material opulence and material comfort. And even if it means that you live simply, Prabhupada tells this story that there was a factory in Bengal in the olden days, and all the factory workers, they were Vaishnavs. And the factory owner himself was also a Vaishnav. But one day that factory owner retired, and he passed on that factory to a Muslim owner. So the Muslim owner came to take ownership. And one of the first things he said that, okay, from tomorrow, when all the workers come in, because what happens is, because the owner was a Vaishnav, he'd allow the workers to come in like Vaishnav Tilak and everything. So he said that next day onwards, no one is allowed to come in your Vaishnav Tilak or, you know, this kind of like spiritual clothing. So you can imagine all the kind of like workers were really upset and stuff. And they're like, oh. So they, you know, they kind of like sadly decided to go in the next day and, you know, they didn't have it on. But there's one worker that decided to disobey the order. And he actually went in with the tilak, dhoti, whatever, kurta, whatever they wore in that factory, full on. And then obviously the owner saw him and brought him into the office, and all the workers were getting worried. Oh no, he's going to get the sack. You know, they're going to chuck him out. And then afterwards, the owner came out with that worker and he made an announcement to everyone. This worker, he's got the conviction. He's had the conviction to actually wear his tilak and be a Vaishnav full on. None of you did that. So from tomorrow onwards, this worker will be allowed to wear his Vaishnava attire, but you guys will carry on wearing the normal Kami attire. So I just thought that's an interesting story. Like, this person would have risked his livelihood, but he did not compromise on his spirituality. So I thought, again, that's another nice example of not budging from simple living, high thinking, not budging from a spiritual lifestyle, from a spiritual identity, even if there are some material problems that come in the way, right? He didn't budge an inch from his stark determination. And this is something I guess we also have to learn how to adjust with as devotees, especially in this yatra, especially the younger generation. In our community, we have, you know, lots of materially successful people, and the younger generation are also becoming materially successful. They're ambitious, you know, and I remember one of my friends was saying to me, he used to be in the ashram. He now works for a corporate company in data. And he was saying to me that it's actually quite ruthless out there, like, because the companies are literally competing against each other to take each other out. It's like warfare, but on a financial level. And then I said to him that, but you know, a lot of devotees, they seem to go into this line, like, you know, investment banking or, you know, hedge funds and all this kind of stuff. And he said that, yeah, but that's because they still have that attachment to it. So as devotees, we all remember this verse is not just preaching to people who are not devotees, it's to us as well. Know that we actually have to also face up to the fact that we may have those desires to be in that rat race, to actually be successful materially. And at the same time, we also want to become Krishna consciousness. So at some point, we have to also have to make that decision of how much we get into it and how much we want to hold back. So anyway, again, further discussion needed there, I guess. Anyway, so Prabhupada goes on to say that for a transcendentalist, it is suicidal to be in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world. And such a policy will frustrate the ultimate gain of life. And then he goes on to say that one might note that you have people like, you know, like one might note that Sukadeva Goswami never met Maharaj Parikshit while he was ruling as a great king. He only met him after Maharaj Parikshit retired from his kingly life. Can you even think of other examples of this happening? There's a famous case in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where similar a case happened where Mahaprabhu didn't meet someone because of their occupation. That's right, Maharaj Prataparudra. So we see that even if you're in material opulence, if you're involved in it too much, then, you know, it's not conducive for material life. And even great, great personalities who had so much more material opulence than us actually walked away from it. So, for example, we've got example of King Prataparudra. We've got the example of King Parikshit. We've got the example of Maharaj Katvanga from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was promised heavenly pleasures, and he asked, how much time do I have? And they said, only a minute. Like, only a moment. He said, I'm leaving this. I'm going down. I'm going to do my tapasya, go back to Godhead. We have example of Raghunath Das Goswami, known for his renunciation, and yet he came from, like, what would now be considered a multi-billionaire family. We have example of Lord Brahma. Interesting example here. Lord Brahma, probably the most materially powerful material being in this world. And then he got cursed to become Haridas Thakur. And as Haridas Thakur, he had nothing. No wealth, no social status, no you know, sort of prestige, nothing. But he was happy because that life as Haridas Thakur gave him opportunity to completely attain pure bhakti towards Krishna, just chanting the holy names of the Lord. So we can see that there are many, many examples of people walking away from the material opulence, from the material situation, and even if it means living simply, even if the society around them is telling them, you know, go for it, reach for gold, they decide, no, I'm not going to go for that. I'm going to stay where I'm at. So I guess I'll finish here. Just last, I guess, question that I guess I could pose for all of us to kind of think about is, you know, what about us? Because we're also trying to preach Krishna consciousness, and we do mix with people in high positions, and we are trying to do that. We are trying to preach to people who are, like, you know, the modern day leaders of the day. How do we reconcile that with here, where it's saying that a transcendentalist does not mix with such people? I don't know if anyone would like to share some thoughts on that question. Yes, Peter?
You know, recently I was listening to some classics from Bhakti Vikash Swami, who wrote a friend of mentioned this quote, interesting quote, that strong men make good times. Good times make weak men. Weak men make bad times. And then bad times make strong men. Sums up your class.
yeah, for sure, for sure. Yep, Jason Prue. Oh, there's a mic there. Yeah.
We were together at the Soho Temple yesterday, and I came upon a little reflection that was, you know, when sometimes maybe if we're talking to people, maybe they're meat eaters or they're drinking coffee or something like this, a way to maybe make ourselves not seem so fanatical is to maybe say, oh, you know, I don't eat meat, you know, because it gives me gas, you know, or, you know, I don't take coffee because it gives me a headache, you know. So there are ways to sort of soften our what may be perceived by some people, some karmis, as being fanatical.
Okay. Any questions or anything from anyone? Yeah, Matachi.
I think this is an ever present question. To what extent do you get involved in the material world at the same time? Because we have a duty of preaching. Srila Prabhupada, if Prabhupada hadn't come to the material West, then none of us would have been here. And of course, you know, we follow the example of Acharya. Srila Prabhupada was stressing the point that he's the founder, Acharya, of ISKCON, and the principle of Yukta Vairagya. Of course, preaching means coming in contact with the materialist. And Srila Prabhupada was criticized. We all know the story of Srila Prabhupada, of course, that he was going to the West. He was introducing ashrams for women as well. And there was a lot of criticism, but we all know that the results, and that Srila Prabhupada was a pure devotee of Krishna to fulfill his mission. So I think it's very simple. You know, there is a mission, and meeting materialists is not to share immaterial enjoyment, whatever. It's to represent Krishna's message. And I think, you know, the bottom line is the Yukta Vairagya, which is the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. To see everything is actually Krishna's energy. And I think, it's my experience in my spiritual life for many years, that there is perhaps a little bit more stress to Vairagya part, and then perhaps even the danger of devotees staying safe in their sort of not being exposed to whatever is perceived as material. But I think there should be more stress to balance that whatever is material is also coming from Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada was very, very proud of the microphone and the recorders because it's been used in Krishna's service. And whilst previously we could not even imagine that, you know, we can actually hear Srila Prabhupada even now. And now that what we're talking about, it can be heard, but anyone who can log in onto line, which is an amazing thing, no?
Yeah, so thank you.
It's just in my experience, I think we should hear more encouragement to actually use things in Krishna's service. And this is the spiritual world then.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'll finish here. I think just to go on that thing, I think nowadays devotees don't have an issue so much with using material things. I think more it's more about the subtle attachments, attachment to positions and services, and attachments to, you know, it's, I think on a, once you're a devotee and you've been practicing for a while, I think the on the gross level, like using like instruments and using technology, I think devotees are getting clued up on that. I think it's more about the subtle, you know, like the sort of entanglements that come, which I think then we, is something that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so, keeping in mind why you're doing, like, you know, sharing Krishna consciousness, it's a service. So if you're preaching to somebody, it's you cannot not be, if you're sincerely preaching Krishna consciousness. So you can, you know, if I'm talking to somebody about, you know, the Bhagavad Gita statements or whatever, you know, of course you have in mind why you're doing it, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Like keeping safe by actually focusing on service and knowing why am I doing this.
There's a nice verse in Nectar of Devotion, which says anasaktasya visayan yatarham upayunjata nirbanda krishna sambande yukta vairagyam uchyate. Yes, and it's saying that one can utilize all the, I'm paraphrasing here again, one can utilize all the material possessions if they are rightly situated above possessiveness themselves. So I think the key is that we do actually have a mood for vairagya. We do. In fact, the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita talks about perfection renunciation. We have to get to the stage where we are fully renounced, physically, mentally, emotionally, spirit, in every single way. Actually, when you're fully renounced, then you're actually most qualified to use the material energy. So until then, we have to keep that internal mood whilst obviously externally trying to use what we can in spiritual life. So
yeah, just one more. The yeah. Bhakti...
I'm just conscious, I'm happy to continue with this, but one sec, if anyone wants to go for breakfast, please do feel free.
Hare I just Krishna. Wanted to make a last point that, yeah. You know, to in order to actually make a balance, is to really emphasize that bhakti is always superior to jnana and vairagya. You know, the jnana and vairagya are contained in bhakti. But by bhakti itself, you automatically are have jnana and vairagya by actually practicing bhakti, the real bhakti.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. If you practice bhakti, in the bhakti they'll teach you to renounce. It's in the sense that, you see, within bhakti you've got karma, you've got activities that you're doing. There's also jnana within bhakti. Yeah, it's like there is endeavor for renunciation, but it's incorporated within the bhakti process. Yes, yes, if you're practicing bhakti, you will get renounced from the material world. But you know, like when you're doing sadhana bhakti, here's the thing. You're practicing bhakti and you get to the stage of, let's say, spontaneous bhakti. Then there's no issue there. You're naturally renounced. But when you're doing your sadhana, there is a kind of internal push that you need to do. That includes a bit of that kind of like using the willpower, using like your, you know, like using the kind of like, you know, utsaha, nishchaya, dhairyat, you know, like you have to kind of have your internal push. But at the same time, I completely appreciate what you're saying. The bhakti process is powerful enough to also carry you through. And the more you become in the bhakti, you know, immersed in the bhakti, after a certain point, especially when the anarthas have all dissipated, you don't need to force yourself. You don't need to push yourself. It will carry you through. Like, for example, that, you know, initially we have to force ourselves, you know, to chant 16 rounds a day. But then when you look at these acharyas, they don't need to count their rounds, Right, you know, like with the great Goswamis, Haridas Thakur, they come to a stage where they've gone beyond, like, you know, discipline. They don't need that discipline. It's become part of who they are. So I appreciate definitely what you're saying. There is the Vairagya will naturally come from the process of bhakti. In sadhana stage, determination, discipline from our side is also has to be brought there. That then obviously will help us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Nice discussion. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.